Welcome to the Power Is Now Radio. Your host and founder of the Power Is Now Incorporated, Eric Frazier.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Power Is Now. My name is Eric Frazier. Thank you for joining me this evening on The Power Is Now First-Time Homebuyer Online Seminar. We're going to have a great night tonight talking about how to decrease your debt ratio. For those of you who are joining me for the first time, my name is Eric Frazier, and I'm the president and founder of The Power Is Now. The Power Is Now is a media company that began in 2009, and since 2009, we have launched a magazine, The Power Is Now magazine, a radio show, The Power Is Now, which is on Blog Talk Radio, and Power Is Now live on Facebook. And so we're really excited about Facebook because of the convenience it provides to all of anyone really interested in buying a home or selling a home to get the information they need. It's so important that you have the right information on whether you're preparing to buy a home or to sell a home. And our goal every Tuesday night, particularly on Tuesday nights at 7 o'clock, is to provide information to people who are interested in buying a home. If you're a first-time home buyer, or maybe you want to buy your second or third home or investment property, well, tune in every Tuesday night and we'll help you get there. I want to thank all of our real estate partners out there who are inviting individuals, their buyers, their sellers, to join us on Tuesday night. Thank you so much for promoting the show. If you're watching the show right now on Facebook, please take a moment and share it into groups that you're a part of or to your friends and family, because we're going to be talking about how to decrease your debt ratio tonight. I think it's a very, very important subject. If you're interested in building wealth, you have to figure out a way to eliminate or minimize the debt. Because debt is a monkey on your back. It really is. It is robbing you of opportunity to build wealth and to save money. Now, for those of you who are visiting for the first time or watching for the first time, our license number as a real estate company, because we're not just a media company, but we're also a real estate company. We're licensed with the state of California. It's called the Power Is Now Real Estate Services. And our state license number is 1980407. 1980407. We're also licensed as a media company, not a media company, but a mortgage company. And it's called the Power Is Now Mortgage Services. And our license number is 1435243. Now, I am the president of both companies and the broker of both companies. And my license number as an individual broker for the state of California only is 01143484. So I'm the broker of the Power Is Now Real Estate Services, and I'm the broker of the Power Is Now Mortgage Services, and my license number with the NMLS is 461807. Please go to the Power Is Now website at thepowersnow.com to learn more about our company. Under the About Us section, you'll find our mission, our vision, our statement of purpose, our core values. You'll learn a lot also about me. My bio and resume is there available for your perusal. So every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, we are live talking about talking to first-time home buyers and people who are looking to buy. And at 12:30, we're talking to real estate professionals and just anyone interested in learning about real estate and what's going on in real estate. And today, I had a great conversation with Jennifer Hernandez, who is an advocate for the environment, but also an advocate for housing. And she's helping to make some changes in the California, there's a California law called CEQA, California Environmental Quality Act. Unfortunately, things have gone awry. Things the law is not being used for what it was intended. And opportunities to develop properties to increase housing, especially in high density areas, are being robbed by those who are using this law, who are abusing this law, and are now not allowing the development of affordable housing to take place in the state of California. Right now, we are about a million, in some estimates, as high as 3 million units behind where we need to be. It's a million based on the most recent report issued by the state of California, in which this report, you can find this report, by the way, under our website. Go look under Real Estate Resources, thepowersnow.com. There are a number of reports there, particularly on page one, the CEQA report and the State of California Housing Report. This report shows that we should be building about 180,000 units a year. We're building about 80,000 units a year. So over the next 10 years, we're looking at a million units shortage, really, if we continue at only 80 to 100. And in fact, if you factor in growth, you know, new household formations, what have you, it could be as high as 3 million. What does that tell you about the cost of housing when there is an undersupply of housing, right? It tells you that the prices will continue to rise. And that's happening right now. Many people are being priced out. Many people are being forced to move further and further away. And Jennifer did an incredible job in writing this report about CEQA and talking about the impact that it's having on housing in California, and particularly on minorities, who are basically the primary ones who are being affected by this abuse of the law. So check out the interview. It was today at 12:30. It's right here on Facebook. I encourage you to listen and learn. I promise you will not regret it. Coming up on this Thursday, we are having a marketing session. So if you're interested in buying real estate, I will be talking about a number of great buys in real estate. So please check it out. It's at 12:30 every Thursday right here on Facebook Live. And if you're a real estate professional and you're interested in pitching your property, letting others know about some great deals you have on the market, please reach out to us. The information about our marketing session can be found on our website at thepowersnow.com and look under Advertise with Us. And there you'll find the details about the marketing session. And folks, the marketing session is free. It is absolutely free. We're committed to helping everyone become homeowners. And that means that real estate professionals should work together, right? Don't you agree? We should work together to get the word out about especially great deals and opportunities out there to buy. Now, if you're interested in moving forward with buying a home right now, maybe you have been tuning in every Tuesday night for a while now and you're just ready to get going, please go to applytobuynow.com and there you'll find our online application. You can take your application at night and run your credit report and know exactly what your FICO score is, and we can get started the next day. Now, if you need assistance, then we have neverrentagain.com, which is our homeowners club, our home buyers club, and we help you get ready to buy. And some of the things I'm going to be talking about tonight, you may need help with in terms of getting ready to buy. Well, we are here to help you. So go to neverrentagain.com and you'll find two programs there that can help you get ready to buy. And for those of you who are real estate professionals and you would like your clients to learn about the 1% down program or the FHA 3.5% down program are programs that require low down payments, even with very low FICO scores. I'm talking 580 or even lower. We have programs for just about everyone. We have a platform just for you. It's called Never Lease Again. You put in your information, your client's information, we'll reach out to the client, we'll update you right away and tell you exactly what's happening with Mr. or Mrs. Borrower, and hopefully get them prepared to buy a home, or at least pre-approved, and you can start showing them property. If you're interested in working with us, please reach out to me. We are looking for great agents to serve all over the state of California. We're licensed just in the state of California. We got a great program. Check out our career section on thepowersnow.com. And also, for those of you who are interested in getting into real estate, we have a program where you can get all of your education, your licensing, and everything completely paid for. Completely paid for. It's called our Hope Ambassador Program, and it's under membership on our website at thepowersnow.com. All right, so let's get started here tonight with talking about how to decrease your debt ratio. And before we get started, I just want to acknowledge some of those of you who have joined us tonight. Walter and Derek Jackson, thank you for joining me tonight. Shanika, thank you for joining. And please share the link with others. Also, I want to thank my team. Our agents here at The Powers Now are joining, and if you have any questions whatsoever, please ask your questions in the chat room, or you can drop me an email at eric.frazier@thepowersnow.com, and I'll be happy to respond to your questions either later tomorrow or even tonight if you ask your questions in the chat room. All right. So how to decrease your debt ratio? You know, I was thinking about this earlier today, and I just thought about how did people live before the advent of credit cards and loans? I mean, how did we survive as a society? It's kind of like the iPhone. How did people survive without, you know, mobile telephones or even the telephone itself? Think of, Alexander Graham Bell, right? But how do we survive? You know, we're so dependent upon technology that many of us feel we can't leave our home. We can't do anything without a cell phone attached to us. And I'm one of those people. We're so dependent upon just so many things. The technology, for number one, is probably the number one thing we're dependent upon. And then we're dependent upon credit cards. We're dependent upon borrowing. I mean, the mindset that existed before all this took place doesn't exist anymore. And it needs to come back if we're going to change. I mean, it's not just affecting us individually, but it's affecting our government. I mean, we have trillions of dollars of debt, which I'm not sure if the federal government will ever be able to pay back. Here in California, we have billions in debt. And I'm not sure if the state of California will ever be able to repay all of its debts. And then, of course, debt is a problem. It's a problem for just about everybody. I've been in the business for 35 years, folks. I've seen literally thousands of applications. And it's rare to come across anyone applying for a home loan that does not have any debt at all. It's rare. In fact, I can't even tell you the last time I took an application and neither the spouse or the husband or the wife or other had any debt. I haven't seen it in such a long time. And so I want to share a little history about debt. You know, back in the early 1900s, even the late 1800s, some stores issued charge cards or coins or tokens for customers' use for specific businesses. And so that's how it got started. In fact, if you ever watch Little House on the Prairie, and those of you millennials, you may not even know anything about Little House on the Prairie or Gunsmoke or any of these Western sitcoms or you know, weekly shows, there will always be the scene of the family going to the general store and putting some things on credit, right? And of course, they would pay it back later. So credit has been around for a long time, but I don't think the dependence on credit back then is anything near what it is today. And then in the early 20s, 1920s, service station gas cards came into play. Of course, with the Model T, Ford, and Ford made cars so affordable, everybody was getting one, right? And so in the 1920s, oil companies issued paper courtesy cards to vehicle owners to encourage a brand loyalty. And so using credit cards to finance your gas became the thing, you know, especially being able to buy and afford a car, then you were able to finance the gas. And gasoline, I'm sure, was expensive then, just like it's expensive now. And then by the 1950s, general travel and entertainment cards came into view. And that's where you were able to get something like an American Express card. It was called the Green Card back in 1958. And use that for entertainment and things of that nature. And then about 1940s to about the 1960s, many banks began issuing their own credit cards. And that, folks, was the beginning of the end. I mean, you really weren't anybody if you didn't have a credit card. And of course, that still exists today. There are people who are quick, if they have one, quick to show you their gold card or their black card or their platinum card. And it's a symbol of status. And you have to wonder, when did being in debt become something to be proud of or something that was prestigious to have? We have changed. And this kind of change is really impacting our society. It's impacting how we show up every day because debt ultimately robs us of the opportunity to build wealth. It robs us of the opportunity to save money. It robs us of the opportunity to buy a home. We have to figure out a way of not being so dependent upon debt, upon credit cards and bank loans. We have to figure out a way. And there are, I guess the basics, we'll call them the basic five ways that you can live without credit. Number one, saving money for emergency funds. Most people who are using credit, a majority of people though who use credit are using it because they don't have any money, right? And it's typically an emergency that would take place that will require, you know, more money than they have. And I believe that credit cards are a great resource for emergencies. You should have credit cards available in lieu of debt or in lieu of cash. While you're saving money, you know, you are, you know, establishing your credit and building a few thousand dollars perhaps in available lines of credit until such point you don't need it anymore because you've saved enough money for an emergency fund. So it is not a bad idea to have credit cards for emergency. But if those emergencies never occur, and yet you still use the credit cards, that's when you are beginning a problem that you ultimately become addicted to. And that leads to number two. Instead of saving money for an emergency fund and only using credit for emergencies, you start using credit for things you want now instead of saving later. And that's number two, saving to achieve your goals, right? And so once you've got the emergency fund covered, you can start saving for other things that you need. Now, you have a choice. You can use your credit card debt and get what you need now, or you can start saving money to do things you want to do or to buy things you want to buy. And so often, though, we use credit cards for things like traveling, right? And so we want to take a vacation. Instead of saving for the vacation, we put $5,000, $10,000 for a great cruise or some type of great destination. Or we, instead of saving for a car, we finance a car, or saving for some renovation or a boat or that great motorcycle, that Harley Davidson you've always wanted. Instead of saving for it, you finance it. And I get it because, you know, we live in a time where we're just, it's the microwave generation, and we want things now, and we're all very impatient. But the other part of it is not just being impatient and wanting things now, it's also the appearance of success. These getting things now makes you appear successful, that you have money, that you're doing well. And who doesn't want to look good to their friends and their family members, their neighbors, you know, who doesn't want to look good? And I can appreciate that's that carnal kind of flesh side of us, fleshly side of us that desires to impress and to show off. And I get it. You know, it's human nature to want to do those things. And so, I mean, it's okay. You can show off, but just own it, right? Instead of showing off a $30,000 Rolex, why not that you're financing? Why not save and buy it and then show it off? You actually will probably feel better about showing it off because you own it. And you'll be thinking about the person who's showing off theirs. You'll be questioning whether they are financing it or owning it. Of course, if you want to go down that rabbit hole of being very judgmental and very carnal-minded and materialistic, that's the kind of thinking that takes place when you are not saving and buying things cash that you want, not need, but that you want. From that boat to that fancy car and that fancy watch to those red bottom shoes and those Gucci and Louis Vuitton purses, you know what I'm talking about. And this is why you stay in debt, because instead of saving for what you want, you go into credit for what you want, and you put yourself further in debt. So that's number two, saving to achieve your goals. Number three, buying a car on cash. And I have to tell you, I've said this many times on the show, that the number one reason why most people can't get pre-approved for as much as they would like to buy where they really want to live, or perhaps they can't get approved at all, is because of car payments. I have to tell you, folks, I would have to cite that as perhaps the number one reason. It's not credit. Because we have programs that will work with you with low FICO scores, right? It's debt. Debt is the number one reason that's robbing people of their ability to buy a home right now. Debt. And particularly car debt. I've seen car payments $1,000 a month, $1,500 a month. $700 a month, $600 a month. I've seen husband and wife both have car payments of $500 to $600 a month. We're talking about out of their combined income, they have close to $1,200 a month, or you know, $1,000 to $1,200 a month going out every single month in car payments. That's $12,000 a year. $12,000 a year. I mean, think about that for a moment here. $12,000 a year. I'm going to pull out my financial calculator just to get an idea of what that would be. If you're saving $1,000 a month, and you're getting, let's just say, even 7%, right? And we're talking about putting it into the market, right? And I know the market's been a little crazy lately, but we're talking about a long-term investment, right? So 7% over the next, let's say, 20 years, all right? What would that be? That would be 240 months. And let's see, future value. Wow, is that right? $520,000. Okay, let's say you don't do it for 20 years. I'm going to go back here. Let's just say for 5 years, 60 months. What would that be? $71,000. If you were able to put away $1,000 a month for the next 5 years and average 7%, right? Now, you may do much better than that. Maybe you'll do lower than that. But that will put $71,000 in your bank account, all right? So perhaps you're not spending $1,000 a month. Maybe you're only spending $500 a month on that car. And so $500 a month at 7% over 5 years, that's $35,000. $500 a month over 5 years, 60 months, at 7% is $35,000. You wonder why people don't have any money, or why, you know, some people complain because they don't have any money. Show me a person that has money in the bank, and I'll show you a person who doesn't have any debt. It's really that simple. Show me a person that has money in the bank, and I'll show you a person that doesn't have any debt. And the reason why they have money in the bank is because they don't have any debt. Because if they have debt, then that's robbing them of their ability to save money. All right, enough on that. Buy a car with cash and not finance. And I know that for many people, it's impossible. They think, well, you know what? I don't want to go buy a used car and take on someone else's problem. I've heard every excuse in the book. I don't want to have something. I need something reliable. I can get to work, right? And none of those things are true. None of those things are true. I know so many people driving around with 10, 15, 20-year-old cars that are working just fine. You know why? Because they take care of them. They change their oil, they take them in for servicing, and they're running just fine. And those are people who have realized that all they need is something to get them from point A to point B. And if they could take some type of mass transit, which California is just, we're not there yet, like we are in New York and Chicago and other places. But if there was a better mass transit system here, they probably wouldn't own a car at all and eliminate even the maintenance cost of having a car. But I've covered that enough. Let's move on to number four, travel without credit. And so, you know, you don't have to, you know, spend money at the top hotel in Las Vegas or wherever you might be going. You can actually, you know, spend cash. You can actually set aside money for your vacation or for your traveling and pay cash for everything. You can use your debit card to book your hotel and pay for your hotel expenses. You can travel on cash, but it means then planning in advance and saving the money to do so. The fifth and the final way on how to live without credit is to use PayPal for online. Now, I know everything is going on right now online. We're buying groceries now here at the Fraser also online. We're using Instacart. They deliver the groceries to the house. And so what a temptation it would be just to put groceries on a credit card, right? All right, and then a lot of people are into Home Shopping Network and all these online platforms. And they are even offering you the ability to finance your debt with their own cards. Heck, PayPal has a credit card. Home Shopping Networks have all these online platforms have credit cards. So you can use a debit card. Now, if you don't want to use your debit card because of security, and it's a good idea not to use your bank debit card, use a PayPal. Set up a PayPal account and use that. And that way, you cannot use credit. Don't apply for the PayPal credit. Just use it, put the money in there, or it's connected to your checking account, and you're able to pay for your online purchases and not incur any debt. So Those are some of the five ways that you can live without credit, right, or using credit. But for those of you who are kind of victims of, you know, just what's going on with this mindset about credit, that it's okay to have credit, then your challenge is that you're trying to manage your credit and you're wondering, why isn't your debt going down, right? Why isn't your debt going down? You have credit, you're not able to save any money, and at the same time, your debt doesn't seem to be moving downward. In fact, it may even be moving up. Well, here are some of the reasons why your debt may not be going down. Number one, the payments you're making are barely covering the interest. And that may be because of the amount of debt you have. Your payments are just barely covering the interest. And in some cases, if they don't even cover the interest, well, then that interest becomes principal. And you'll see what started off to be $1,000 now becomes $1,200, $1,300, $1,500. And so interest is the cost for borrowing the money. And so there are some estimates out there that if you just pay the minimum payment, you may have that debt for years when it could be completely extinguished in a matter of a few months or a year or so completely. Another reason why is that your payments are going towards fees. You're not paying your payments on time. And some of these credit card companies, their late fees are $25, $30, $40, $50. I mean, imagine having charging your car for $25 in gas, not paying it, and then getting the late fee for $25. I mean, the late fee can be as much as some of your purchases for food and gas and things of that nature. And all you're doing is just racking up debt. And you're racking up debt not only in your purchases, but you're racking up debt also in your fees. Another reason why your debt isn't going down is because you're still creating debt. You know, the credit card companies are offering you zero interest. They're enticing you with moving your balance to another card at zero interest. And you're thinking, oh my God, let me take advantage of this. I can reduce my interest costs. But instead of now paying that debt off at zero interest, you go use the old card, you just transferred the debt, and you're back into more debt again. And so don't fall for these zero interest programs trying to get you to transfer their debt to another debt. All you've done now is made yourself even more vulnerable to adding more debt to the card you just transferred over, the debt of the card you just transferred over to another card. And then the last one is that you're only paying the minimum payment. That's really a challenge. If you're only paying the minimum payment, the first question I have is why? The answer typically might be because your debt ratio is out of whack already. You simply don't have any extra money to pay more. And so by paying the minimum payment, you're just covering the interest and maybe not that at all. All right. The fact that you're paying the interest, you're just paying the interest. There's number one reason why you still have the debt. And that the fact that you're paying the minimum payment will be the reason why the debt will probably be there forever. So there may be someone listening right now who's been carrying a credit card debt for years now. It's time to pay it off. And there are a number of strategies that you can put into play to reduce your debt. And I'm going to talk about that in just a few minutes.
You're listening to The Power Is Now. For more information about the show, go to thepowerisnow.com or find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Looking back, I certainly recall one of the greatest moments in my life. The day I set foot in a house that I purchased on my own. Man, what a morning I'll never forget. The American dream lives on. The Power Is Now Buyers Club is here to help you achieve it right now. We have access to lenders and nonprofits who are willing to give you the down payment for a home when others are not. That's right. The down payment assistance is not a loan. It's a gift. Find us at thepowerisnow.com and let's talk. Own your home today. Live the American dream. Thepowerisnow.com. The future is here. Who doesn't want to be a superstar? I know you would. I also know you're working hard to be the best real estate agent you can be. But is that enough? Are you a superstar? Well, you should be. Join The Power Is Now and make your path to superstardom as short as it can be. Find us at thepowerisnow.com. Get interviewed on The Power Is Now Radio today and multiply your media exposure now. Thepowerisnow.com, bringing out the superstar in you. Welcome back to The Power Is Now and your host, Eric Frazier.
So now let's transition to what is the debt to income ratio and how to decrease your debt to income ratio. Well, first of all, the debt to income ratio is used in lending, and it really gives us an idea of your capacity and your ability to repay the mortgage. No one wants to lend money to anybody who can't pay it back, right? That's from business, big business and banks, or to individuals, you know, friends and family. You know, no one wants to pay or wants to lend money to someone who doesn't have the ability to pay it back. And so the debt ratio really gives us an indication of your ability to pay the debt back. The lower the debt ratio, the greater your ability is to pay it back, and perhaps to pay it back even before it's due. So your debt to income ratio compares your monthly debt expenses to your monthly gross income. And so to calculate the debt ratio, what you do is you add up all of the payments you make towards your debt on an average month, right? Add it up, and then you divide that debt into your income. That's how you come up with your debt ratio. Now, from a lending perspective, the debts that would be part of your debt ratio would be your credit card payments, your car loans. Other debts would be loans or payday loans, if you have any of those, unfortunately. Any housing expense like your rent, or if you have a mortgage already, the principal interest, taxes, insurance, and HOA. And any other homeowner association fees if you have a mortgage already. And if you don't, then anything that's reporting on the credit bureau is what we'll use to calculate your debt ratio. So child support reports on the credit bureau, right? Any type of credit card debt, any type of anything that's financed in which there is, it's being reported to the credit bureaus, we're going to calculate as part of your debt to income ratio. But I want you to know that that debt to income ratio doesn't tell the whole story. It doesn't really. It tells a very shallow story, if you will, for the banking industry. It does. Because as you well know, you have a whole lot more expenses going on other than just the rent and the car payments and the credit card payments or the association dues or the, you know, you have other expenses that are not reporting on your credit bureau. And those expenses are not being added into your debt ratio. If we were to add those expenses into your debt ratio, I think that many people probably would not qualify for a home loan. So what we do, though, is we limit it just to those expenses that we can find on your credit report. And so we divide your monthly income by, you know, if you paid your annual salary, divide it by 12, we come up with a monthly income that your gross income before taxes are deducted. To get your debt ratio now, we're going to take your total debts and divide it into that income, and we're going to come up with a multiple that tells you what your debt ratio is. So here's an example. You have $400 a month on credit card debts, which it's about average. Maybe I've seen much more. $200 a month on a car loan, and that would be ideal if you had a car. If you had to get a car loan and you could keep your payment at $200 a month, that would be ideal. All right. But unfortunately, we're seeing many people with car payments and, as I mentioned earlier, $500, $600 a month. $1,400 in rent, that would be even fantastic. But you can hardly find anyone paying less than $1,800 to $2,000 a month in rent anymore. But you say $400 in credit card debt, $200 on a car loan, $1,400 in rent, that gives you a total monthly commitment of $2,000 a month, $2,000 a month. And if you make, say, $5,000 a month or $60,000 a year, then that gives us a debt ratio of 40%, all right? We're taking that $2,000 in monthly expenses divided into $5,000 in income, and that gives us a debt ratio of 40%. Now, where does your debt ratio need to be, right? Where does it need to be? Most of the banks we work with as a mortgage brokerage, are looking for you to have the lowest debt ratio possible. That's what they're really looking for. Ideal would be a 28% housing ratio and a 36% total debt ratio. The housing ratio is just that. It's the house payment, principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. Or in your case, if you don't own a home right now, it's your rent. You divide that into your gross income, and that gives you a house ratio. So you might want to calculate that now and see where you are. Take your rent. If it's $2,000 a month and you have income of $5,000 a month, then you're looking at a house ratio of 40%. Just your housing ratio. That doesn't include any other expenses at all. Just your housing ratio. Now, I have to tell you, folks, that most of the people that we are talking to today, their housing ratio is not 28%. That's actually Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac guidelines is 28 over 36. That's where they want you to be. And there's a reason for that. The reason why they want your house ratio to be 28%, just a housing expense, is because it's based on your gross income. Now, nobody lives on their gross income. We live on our net income. So if your gross income is about $5,000 a month, then your net is probably around $3,500, maybe 30, maybe, I don't know, maybe 30%. Yeah, about $3,500 a month. And so think about it. If your housing ratio is 40% based on your gross, what's your housing ratio based on your net? Well, it would be significantly higher. Right? You take that same $2,000 and you divide it into 3,500. And what do we get? We get a housing ratio of 57%. Almost 60% of your income is just going to the house payment. What about food and groceries and all the things that you need just to live? None of those things, by the way, we include in your debt ratio, right? What about those things? So it makes for a very challenging situation. Here's another interesting fact. This was just recently published by the Harvard study, the Joint Center for Housing Studies by Harvard University. You can find that study, by the way, on page 5 under real estate real estate resources. Go to thepowersnow.com, and under the fifth tab, you'll find the Harvard study. And in that study, they said that over 50%, about 10 million people have over 50% of their income going towards housing. And so the data is there. The cost of rents are continuing to rise. And if your income, if your net income, if your house payment or your rent is currently at or around 50% of your net income, this would explain why you aren't able to eliminate your debt, that you are incurring more debt, and that you're not able to save money for down payment. And I tell you, I see this every single day. The average debt ratio here at the Powers Now, front-end ratio is in the very high 30s or the low to mid 40s, which means that their net front-end ratio is in the high 50s or 60%. And so, unfortunately, what are they going to do? You know, what are they going to do? They're paying the rent. So the next thing we're looking at then in terms of their debt to income ratio is we're looking at the payment shock, right? Typically, lenders do not want to see your current rental payment versus your new house payment. They don't want to see the house payment to be more than 150%, and that's really high. Ideally, around 110 to 120% of your current rent. And it's for the very reason of the debt ratio. They see your debt ratio is 40, almost 50% gross, 40% on your gross income, 50 to 60% on your net income. And then you're stepping up. Instead of paying, you've been paying $2,000 a month. Now you're getting ready to step up to $3,500 a month on a house payment. And so the lender is reasonably concerned about your capacity and your ability to pay. Another issue why the front-end ratio is so high is because, well, we have champagne tastes and unfortunately beer budgets. And the first-time home buyer, don't try to do it all. Don't try to do it all right now, all right? You're just starting your career. You're not even in your 50s yet. You haven't peaked out yet. You're going to make more money. You're going to get raises. You're going to start a business. You're going to achieve more success in your life. Just be humble. You know, like the song says, sit down, be humble, right? Start off at something that's really affordable. Yes, I know. It's not going to be in the best of neighborhoods. Yes, I know. It's not going to be in the best of condition. But get in where you fit in, right? The last thing you want to do is get into a home and lose that home. You want to get into the home and hold on to that home, maybe even pay off that home, maybe even sell that home and leverage it because you were able to hold on and now it's worth double what you paid for. Use that money, right? To buy the home of your dreams. That's how it's supposed to work. I'm seeing a whole lot of thumbs up happening right now. People are agreeing with me. That's how it's supposed to work. But so often we have people, folks, I have just a bucket load of expired pre-approvals of people who have champagne tastes and beer budgets. And you know, the sad thing is that now 2 years have gone by, they are completely priced out. They can't even buy. Now, if they were willing to humble themselves and buy, you know, the best looking shed in the neighborhood, they can't even afford it now. They can't even afford the shed in the neighborhood because they've allowed their tastes and their unreasonable expectations to drive them completely out of the market. Don't let that happen to you. Oh, my God. Don't let that happen to you. Sit down. Be humble. Listen to your agent. Guide you to the property that is within the parameters of your pre-approval that will enable you to get in where you fit in. So it's something that's really, that's one of the things that just gives me heartburn. Every day I have a conversation with a client who's just unrealistic about, you know, buying a home. I'm thinking of one client right now. This is a highly intelligent lady. I mean, master's degree, very educated. It goes to show, too, you know, well, I won't even go there, but smart lady, but just too smart, making unreasonable offers, thinking that the seller owes you something. The seller doesn't owe you anything. You know, they don't. You need to make a minimum of the list price and maybe even more. It's still a seller's market. And hopefully at the list price or above the list price, it's still within your pre-approval and you can get in. Listen to your agent, folks. I've gone on a completely different tangent here about borrowers' expectations, but it speaks directly to the issue of buying more than what you really can afford or should be buying and extending your ratios out even more. So the housing ratio is very, very important. You want to stay within, I would say, 28 to 35% of your income. So do it right now. Get out your pen and paper. Here's a good way you can know what you can afford. Take your annual income, whatever that is, times 35%. All right? That's the house payment you can afford. And I'm talking principal and interest, taxes and insurance and HOA if you're going to buy a condominium. All right? Now, if you want to push the limit, all right, because keep in mind, we're talking about 35% of your gross income. So if you want to push the limit, you can go to 40, all right, go to 40%. So if you make $100,000 a year, right, you make $100,000, you and your husband combine $100,000 a year, you take 40% of that, which is what, $40,000, divide that by 12, your principal interest, taxes and insurance, HOA dues, and anything else can exceed $3,333.33, folks. That's it. And that's a 40% back in ratio. Here's the other thing, too, is sometimes some it just depends on your credit score, but you may not even be able to get approved for a debt ratio higher than 42, 43%. All right. So that's something we have to look out for in maximizing your purchasing power through a loan approval. Now, the next is the back end ratio. And that's where we take all the other debts that we're talking about. Right. And so we're adding to the house payment now, the credit cards, the car loans, the student loans. Oh, my God, the student loans. If you have a student loan, we have to use the fully amortized payment. That's what we have to use, right? So if there are no payments, we're going to take 1% of that total amount of debt you owe, and that's your payment. That's your payment. You owe $250,000 in student loans, well, your payment is going to be $2,500 a month. Try to qualify for a home with a payment of $2,500 a month. That's what we have to do. Now, if you don't want to do that, then you'll have to contact the Student Aid Commission and find out what the payment would be, fully amortized over the longest term they'll give you, which is typically 25 years. and we might be able to back that payment down from $2,500 to maybe $1,800 to $2,000. So student loan debt is really impacting a lot of people from being able to buy a home. And there's just no way around it right now, folks. Hopefully the law will change and the guidelines will change. But we have to add the student loan debt into that. Now, FHA, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, they really want you to have a front-end ratio of 28, a back-end ratio of 36. If you want to push it, they like to see maybe no more than 35 front-end and maybe 45 back-end. In fact, conventional loans, they typically don't want you to have a back-end ratio of more than 45%, although with really good credit and good reserves, you can push the limits on all these agencies. You can push the debt ratio limits to the high 50s. I've seen it. Even 60% of the gross income. But just because you can get approved for debt ratios that high doesn't mean you have to take the loan, doesn't mean you have to buy a home that's going to put you at ratios that high. It does not mean that, folks. It just means that you have some serious purchasing power because of your good credit or reserves to be able to exceed the normal ratios of 28 over 36 or 35 over 42 or 40 over 45, right? You can exceed that because of your great credit, but it doesn't mean you have to do that. Don't do it. If, you know, we need sustainable homeownership, and it starts with government policies, of course, but ultimately it starts with you not going into more debt than you can actually afford. So when you look at the gross debt ratio of 50%, you have to think about what is the net debt ratio. Because the net debt ratio includes everything else. The $800 a month, if you're a family of four with kids, that you're spending on food. A couple hundred dollars a week. The $200 to $400 a month, you're spending on gas, traveling back and forth to work. The gym membership, right? And then the kids have ballet or they have football. I mean, folks, you want to live, right? You have to live. You don't want to live for your house. You want your house to live for you. That's why it's very important that you have a budget and that you, the very first thing you need to do when you get set to buy a home is you need to establish a budget. And we use mint.com. If you haven't heard of it, check it out, mint.com. We encourage all of our members of the Buyers Club to use Mint.com. What I love about it is that if you use your debit card for everything, who uses cash anymore, every dime you spent can be tracked and categorized. And then they give you these beautiful graphs, and you can see exactly where your money is going. And then you can start working on reducing your debt and limiting your spending and saving money. You need a plan, and Mint.com does a great job and helping people develop a plan. And we have a program, too, where we can help you get your plan on and start saving money. And so the net debt ratio, you know, we don't even use it in lending. We don't even use it. We use gross debt ratio. I don't know why we should be considering the net debt ratio. Maybe it would decrease the number of foreclosures. Maybe more people would, if we use a net debt ratio, then, of course, it would affect demand because there'll be less people out there that can qualify for the homes. And when you can decrease demand for housing, right, you'll see the prices start to drop. Or if you can increase the supply for housing, you'll see the prices start to drop. Something has to happen because as income rises and as programs get more flexible and liberal in terms of how far they're willing to go as far as debt ratio, you're not going to see the house prices go anywhere. And as long as we have this housing crisis in California and throughout the nation in some areas, we're not going to see prices go anywhere but up. All right, we are millions of units behind. Some say as high as 3 million units behind. And that just means that the cost of housing will continue to rise. So your only solution is to really tackle the debt and your debt to income ratio so you can get in now. And you know what? You may have to bite the bullet and end up having a housing ratio in the high 40s and a net housing ratio in the high 60s, which puts even more pressure on you not to use credit and to eliminate debt altogether, because just handling your living expenses is going to take you all the way to the end of your budget with very little money and savings at the end of each month. Now, folks, that's the truth. That's the gospel truth. And I think if we don't do something about it right now, if we don't do something about our debt ratio, then it's just going to be even more difficult for you to buy in the future. Home prices, don't think that the home prices are going to get less. It's going to be easier later on. It's not. Here's the next big headwind for first-time home buyers. Here it is. You ready for this? Not just rising prices, but rising interest rates. Right now, it's hard to pre-approve a buyer without a debt ratio in the 50s. And we're pre-approving buyers at interest rates between 4.5% to 5%. And they're in their 50s. What do you think is going to happen when interest rates go to 6 and 7%, which they are going to go there? Just look at the history of interest rates. Go to Freddie Mac's website. Just Google the history of interest rates, and you'll see that it's coming back. It is going to happen. It's not a matter of if. It is a matter of when. So I want to encourage you tonight as we conclude here. We're up against the hour to really focus on reducing your debt ratio. If you need assistance, please reach out to us. We can help you do that. How do you lower your debt ratio? Here's some tools that you can use or some strategies that you can put into place. Number one, increase the amount that you're paying monthly towards your debt. These extra payments will reduce the principal, and over time, the principal will be extinguished and you'll eliminate the credit card. Avoid taking on more debt. I tell you, consider using your debit card, living on cash. Try to postpone applying for anything you don't really need right now. I mean, if you don't need it, then you shouldn't get it. And if you don't have the cash for it, then don't buy it. All right? Number three, postpone large purchases. I know you think you need another car. Take the car to mechanic. We used to call them shade tree mechanics. You know, if you can't afford to take it to the dealer, there are a lot of independent auto shops right now. Cut a deal with somebody, all right? Or save up the money and get the repairs done over time. But don't just give up and get frustrated because a car is making noise or is too old or is burning up a lot of gas. At least you own it. Or at least maybe you can own it. If you have debt, if you're making payments on it and on top of it having problems, well, that's even a double whammy, right? That's a double problem. But at least you own it. If it's a bucket, at least you own it. Don't get caught up in trying to keep up with the Joneses and these guys and girls driving around in their fancy cars with their big payments. They're broke, all right? They may not look like it, but they are, all right? Tell them to show you their bank statement and not their car payment, because that's all they're doing when they show you that brand new car is that they went out and just got another car payment. And then lastly, recalculate your debt ratio on a monthly basis, all right? It's important that you do that. Calculate your debt ratio on a monthly basis. It's so important that you know where you are at all the time. In fact, Mint.com will be a great tool for you to do that. You can have it on your phone or your laptop, and you can see where you are at all times. And then let me give you one more thing, one more bonus thing. If you want to eliminate your debt, right, pick out one debt, perhaps the smaller debts. Let's start with the smaller debts, and let's just work our way up to the big daddy debt, whatever that might be, all right? And so on the smaller debts, you make a lump sum payment on that thing. You pay the minimum payments on everything else, but you make as much as you can afford, you put it on that smaller debt, and you extinguish that debt. There's something about paying off a debt that just brings excitement, and it gives you hope, it motivates you, it gets you more serious. And then the next card, the next amount, you put as much as you can on it, lump sum it, and pay the minimum payments on the escrow, and you just keep doing that until you get to the big daddy debt, which could be the car loan or the car payment or the student loan debt, all right? But you end up with one very large debt, and then you really get focused on that thing. Maybe you won't knock it out in a year. Maybe it'll be 2 years. But you will get it done because of that type of focus. Well, folks, I hope I've shared some information tonight with you that would encourage you to really get focused on debt. And for those of you who are watching tonight, please share this video. I know you know somebody that could probably benefit from this information. If you have any questions at all about anything I've said tonight, or perhaps you disagree with something I've said, I would love to hear from you. I really would. The information here we're sharing is designed to empower, to encourage, to support you in your efforts to become a homeowner. We want everyone to become homeowners, and we would like to help you do so. So please check us out, The Power Is Now, If you would like to get started with buying a home today and you want to know exactly what your purchasing power is, go to applytobuynow.com and we'll be happy to assist you in achieving that goal. If you need help, please go to neverrentagain.com. Sign up for our free program and get the plans. We'll help you get Mint.com set up and everything. All right, we'll help you do it. And then we have a coaching program, a financial fitness coaching program for a monthly fee. We will hold you accountable to your goals. We will help you achieve your goals across all the areas. I mean, getting a mortgage, eliminating debt, reestablishing credit, building up your savings. We will help you. Monthly coaching. It's called Never Rent Again. And then again, for our great agents out there who partner with us, who send us clients, thank you so much for coming and listening tonight. Those of you who are on Blog Talk Radio, agents and consumers, thank you so much for listening tonight. Please share this information. And if you have someone you would like us to talk to, particularly a real estate agent, go to Never Lease Again. That's been created just for you. Never Lease Again. There you have access to all the tools and resources we have available, in addition to a place to put your clients' information, a little bit about them if you wanted to share what their challenges might be, the program that you think they might be interested in. All of that is there on neverleaseagain.com. And just hit submit and we will reach out to them right away. Well, if you would like to connect with us at one of our seminars, go to thepowersnow.com/events or just to our website and look under events. And you can see about the seminars we have coming on at churches and nonprofit groups. If you're a church and you would love to have us come out and put on a seminar, we'd be happy to do so. We love partnering with churches or nonprofit organizations. Call us out. If you're a real estate office and you would like me to come out and talk about down payment assistance programs, I'll be happy to do so. The Power Is Now Mortgage specializes in first-time home buyers, and we have every program you can imagine to help people get into homes. And if you are an investor and you're looking to invest in real estate, you need an investment type loan, a private equity loan, a hard money loan, a construction loan, a commercial loan, we do it all here at The Power Is Now Mortgage Services. Well, thank you again for joining us tonight. Remember, we are at our best and we maximize our success when we act now. Why? Because the power is now, folks. Have a great evening. See you soon right here on Facebook Live and The Power Is Now Radio.
You've been listening to The Power Is Now Radio. For more information about the show, check us out at thepowerisnow.com or find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter.